If you have an appetite for fun, then the Disney California Adventure Food and Wine Festival is the place to be. March 2nd through April 12th, only at the Disneyland Resort. Enjoy deliciously fresh food, California wines, craft beers, specialty cocktails, live music, and more. All served up with a dash of Disney magic. Get more details at disneyland.com/foodandwine.
Priestess and the Cauldron, a podcast featuring Elvira Love and Phoenix Lafay, two out-of-the-broom-closet professional witches with over 70 years combined experience of making magic. This is a show on the LMC Radio Network. During each show, Elvira and Phoenix will help you create rituals, make spells, make potions, and much more besides. They'll spend time speaking about different goddesses from all over the world, paying attention to the ancient reverence of long ago cultures and infusing it with a modern perspective. Elvira, Phoenix, take it away.
Well, we are very early.
We are very early.
And if we had been as early as I initially set up the show by mistake,
yes,
it would have been 12 hours ago.
Which neither one of us would have been up and running for.
No, it would have been a very, very odd show of slurred words and snoring.
And lots of it. So, but here we are, bright and chipper, ready to give you all kinds of wisdom. Well,
Elvira, you are funny.
I'm trying to be positive. I could just start, you know, babbling and aimlessly, and you'll throw in, and they'll think us very brilliant, right? Well, anyway, obviously, here we are. What has our week been like for each of us? I always let you go first, so
you do.
I feel that's really a fair shot.
Well, Elvira, as per usual, when you ask that question, I have to look down at my calendar here and think, what did I do this week? Because I've already forgotten. It's actually been a pretty mellow week. I intentionally gave myself some spaciousness beyond my quote-unquote regular schedule, which it does not.
And she's rolling her eyes with that.
Yeah, I don't have a regular schedule, but I have specific times that I have to be specific places every week.
Right.
So beyond that, I try to keep it kind of easy because today is rush, and then I'm teaching a week in intensive, and then I go back to my quote-unquote regular schedule on Monday, which means being at Milk and Honey on the floor on my own all day.
Right.
Is my regular Monday gig. So starting right now with the radio show, and then immediately after, the reason we're early is because I have a workshop tonight.
Uh-huh.
So after the radio show, I'm rushing off to do a workshop on altars and shrines.
There you go.
And then tomorrow at 9 a.m. I start a weekend intensive where I'm teaching Pearl Pentacle all weekend.
Whoa.
And then right back to the regular schedule. So
right.
it's kind of a busy weekend going into a busy week.
Right.
I tried to keep this week a little bit more mellow.
Mellow.
Yeah.
The weather has helped with the exciting thunder that we had at the beginning of the week, and regular things like, oh my God, it rained and it hailed and it did all kinds of stuff, and now it's sunny and actually mild, a little chilly. So, you know, as a temperature gauge, it kind of fluctuated.
Quite a bit.
Yes.
So weird.
Yeah, it was. Very weird.
How's your week been, Elvira?
Oh, my week. Well, that's a little dramatic. But anyway, it was reasonably okay. It was, you know, it had its little peaks and valleys, as it usually does. You know, I work 3 days over at Lucky Mojo and, you know, do readings out of Missionary Independent Spiritual Church. So it was, you know, a busy, evenly paced 3 days. And, you know, the things that have come and gone are actually not anything to do with the spiritual work or clients or any of that. It had to do more with regular, like, oh, by the way, you now owe this amount to the IRS, and now let's dig it out of your backyard and the chest that you hold all the money and send that off. And, you know, some things with AT&T, which we will slide over.
Yes.
And what else? You know, I'm going to be going back on Hoodoo Psychics,
nice.
Which is a sister company out of our little group of businesses that are part of our offshoots of Lucky Mojo and all. So I had to get accustomed to their new system, since though being one of the original ones, since then they've gone through permutations, I had to call the owner and we had to walk me through all the new things, which actually are much nicer and quicker and easier. I was dreading it. Literally, I had a nightmare of a night going, oh my God, oh my God, oh my God, new technology.
Yes.
I don't do the new technology well. But it worked out.
Are you going to have specific hours on Hoodoo Psychic?
No.
Okay.
The way it's going to be is right now I'm going to, because I work Monday, Tuesday, and Wednesday, and then, of course, Saturday at Milk and Honey,
yeah.
I'm probably going to either do, again, this is, you know, like Thursday evenings and Friday, some, you know, midday, and then maybe Sunday, I don't know. It's kind of it's going to be when I'm available, I'm not at a location that I am doing it at, and
yeah.
Just leave it open for that and see how it works. There may be some changes, and when that happens, it'll probably be announced on the radio show here, like, yeah. I'm going to be doing this. But it's got to get back into some swing here to fit it in. I know
yeah.
People say, oh, just leave it on and do your own thing, and I'm like, yeah, that's a good idea up to a point.
Yeah.
But
you're on call.
When you're on call, and, you know, being on call is acceptable if you're in the middle of a yoga session or something like
sure.
that, you know.
But you're not exactly free when you're on call.
That's true.
Yeah.
You're there.
Yeah.
So we'll see how this, you know, works into my world of fun and games.
Yeah.
And got to see my granddaughter's new swing set all put together, and it's all pretty with the little clubhouse at the top and everything, and that was real fun to watch.
Nice.
That. So I got to be grandma-ish and professional-ish.
Nice.
So with that, I mean, our topic is definitely been a strange one for me this week.
Yeah.
You know, it...
Continued series of exploring different traditions of witchcraft.
Yes.
We're talking about one that neither of us have any experience with.
This is true. It was a fascinating read. I obviously, as we all do, run to the internet.
Oh, yeah.
Which was very helpful.
Yeah.
And it's called Sarah Faria.
Yeah, Sarah Faria.
And
they have the tradition, the Sarah Faria tradition, has actually a really great informative website.
Yes, they do.
Yeah.
I was very impressed with that.
Yeah.
And so it is sarahfaria.com or .org.
Yeah.
That's right. It's an organization. So we can just jump in and start babbling away at it.
Go.
You know.
Okay.
You know. So obviously the first thing is, who put this together?
Well, Ira. So what's funny is Fred, what are they calling him on the website? Fred McLaren?
Yeah,
Fred McLaren. But then as I was doing more research, I found his full name, and I had to put that in my notes. Frederick McLaren Charles Adams II.
Yes. I thought the Adams II was cool.
I really am always excited when I see someone who has the second or the third or
mm-hmm.
whatever.
Mm-hmm.
I like it. I used to work with someone. I won't say his name because... He doesn't know that I do a podcast on witchcraft. But I used to work with someone whose name was so-and-so, so-and-so the third.
Uh-huh.
And I just thought, oh, that's so fancy.
I know. It kind of makes you feel like you're with aristocracy, you know. But, yeah, it really is. And, you know, when I was reading it, it was like Fred Adams.
Right.
They really talk about that. And there's a woman, Jo Carson.
Yes, who's the current leader of the church.
Yes.
Leader is a loose term. I don't think they really have hierarchy or any sort of formal leadership, but she's sort of the voice of the tradition
right
now because Fred has passed on.
Yes.
He's on the other side.
As well as his wife, Svetlana.
So, I didn't see that Svetlana had passed away.
Oh, yes, she too has. She has passed.
Oh, very interesting.
Yes, I have to find her passing date, obviously, if we will be able to. Okay, he died in August 2008.
Yeah.
She died in 2010.
Oh, I totally missed that. Nice.
Yeah.
Svetlana Buterin?
Butrin, I guess.
Sorry, I apologize.
It's
Svetlana. But she went by Lady Svetlana.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, yes, those two. And then, of course, I guess how they called Jo Carson is a literary executive.
Mm. Well, Jo Carson has written a book called Celebrate Wildness.
Yes.
Magic, Myth, and Love on the Farrah Faria Path.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So she has written a lot about this organization and the founders of the organization and the early days.
Right.
And I believe she also made a film.
Yes, she
about
did.
The organization and really about what witchcraft was kind of like in the 70s with this sort of really became a thing.
Right, right. And I'm trying to see she has her book, but I know that it is, her book. And then she did a film, Something Gaia.
Oh, yes.
It was, we're sitting here.
I have 7 pages of notes.
You too.
This edition. And I tried to put my notes in some sort of Dancing with Gaia.
Dancing with Gaia. See, I knew
it was Gaia. I tried to have my notes be in some sort of order, but, you know.
You never know. It's kind of like, wow, I think it's for both of us, it's so new to us that you take a lot of notes because you're sitting trying to find the things that, where it is, what it is.
And like I said, their website is chock full of stuff. So if you trying to narrow that down to what we could talk about in an hour was a thing.
Yeah.
So, you know, we probably should say kind of the crux of their thing.
Right.
So here, I'll read quote exactly from one of their websites so that you're hearing their words. Farrah Faria is many things, a religion, a way of life, a philosophy, and a kind of magic. It's nature magic. The name means celebration of wildness and is based in the Latin roots fera, as in wild or feral, and faria, which means festival. Fairy faria is a fairy face. The images and feeling tones of fairy inform how we want to live on earth. The fae are our model for living intimately with nature rather than dominating it.
Mm-hmm.
So it's pretty interesting. It's this interesting amalgamation of fae, fairy, and very Western European concepts of fae.
Right.
Right? And then this Italian, this Greek mystery tradition sort of have been squished together. So nature-based, fae-based, but they also follow the cycle of Kore, who becomes Persephone, queen of the underworld, right? Mm-hmm. So it's very, and for folks who are familiar with Wicca and the cycle of the year according to Wicca, it's all based on the cycle of intimacy between the lord and the lady, right?
Right,
and that is kind of what their cycle is based off of, too. So it's an interesting amalgamation of a few different mystery traditions.
Right, and they have, the wheel is actually 9.
Right, I really like this, actually.
Yeah, and I thought, you know, it has it's called Repose, and it's around the Thanksgiving time, you know, between Samhain and Yule, and, you know, marking basically the goddess's beginning of her retreat. So there's something to be said about what they're doing, and I really felt intrigued. It kind of, it spoke, mm-hmm. and I began to go, God, this is something that I feel really akin to, even if I'm not following their their things, because they do have practices and all these incredible things, which I, as Phoenix obviously pointed out about their website, I got really into just like reading it, and mm-hmm. it's this, and it's star-based, and it's horizon-based, and it's, you know, it's got all these.
And they have lots of rituals.
Lots of rituals.
Liturgy.
Yeah.
But their cycle of the year is based on, it's a love cycle,
mm-hmm.
right? And
mm-hmm.
Elvira mentioned repose. So they have marked holidays like you find in most pagan and witchcraft traditions. Repose is from Samhain to Yule, that entire,
right.
So it's not a marked day.
Right.
It's a cycle. It's a period of time. Mm-hmm. And it's considered the festival of emptiness and return to the raw elements.
Mm-hmm.
So this is the goddess sleeps alone. It's that time of going within, the earth in communion with the kiss of all.
Right.
Something from their website, right? And then they have winter solstice. They call it Yule, December 22nd. This is the festival of first awakening.
Mm-hmm.
This is the longest night, like we all know. The holy infant thrusts lustily from their information.
Uh-huh.
So this is starting to recognize we are in the darkest of time. We are in the nakedest
mm-hmm.
of times, right?
Mm-hmm.
But life is jubilant.
Mm-hmm.
This is a tradition of celebration.
Right.
Totally. I'll come back to that in a minute.
Yes, we will.
Celebration. Then they have Olmec,
mm-hmm.
February 1st,
mm-hmm.
what we might call in bulk or Candlemas, right?
Mm-hmm.
The festival of enscaled buds and bare branches.
Ooh.
Right?
Yes.
So this is the torchlit procession. The goddess comes from the underworld. Her belly is big. The infant drops for delivery.
Mm-hmm.
It's you know, that energy, that birthing energy that
mm-hmm.
is very traditional
mm-hmm.
for witchcraft tradition.
Mm-hmm.
The goddess gives birth to the infant god at the spring equinox.
Mm-hmm.
And the spring equinox, they call Ostara, March 21st. It's the festival of the rising sap.
Aha. Uh-huh.
Right? Yes. The god is born.
Yes.
The goddess becomes the maiden, which mm-hmm. is interesting because the god is born.
Mm-hmm.
Right? So there's this strange...
going from mother to maiden.
Right.
Yeah.
Interesting.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Then Beltane, like you would expect on May 1st, the festival of full flowering. Sex crown, the holy nakedness of blossoming flesh.
Mm. Yes. Yum, yum.
By sex, the two are divided. So this mm-hmm. is when they announce their engagement, the goddess and the god. There isn't.
Mm-hmm.
This isn't when they consummate their marriage. This
mm-hmm.
is when they announce their engagement.
Right.
This is love at its fullness.
Right.
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 Midsummer, just like you would expect on June 21st, the festival of pollination and green leaves.
That's the sex.
This is right. They race to the greenwood and mate in the streaming clouds of pollen.
My goodness, that is so
right?
literary.
I know, it's adorable, yes. So then Lunasa, uh-huh. they're August 1st, they call Lunasa, the festival of fruiting and beginning of the harvest. This is the meanderings of the honeymoon for the lord and the lady.
Mm-hmm.
The goddess,
okay.
The breasts of the goddess begin to swell.
Okay.
Okay,
yep, we got it.
Harvest home is what they call the autumn equinox, which is next week for us already,
yes.
The autumn equinox. The festival of homecoming and release, recognizing the nights are now growing longer, the harvest, the belly of the goddess begins to swell, and she makes annunciation, which I'm not really sure what that's supposed to mean.
Well, that's good.
Yeah.
We should at some point look this up.
Right? So, yeah, more to explore. Then Samhain,
mm-hmm.
November 1st. The festival of sinking to the soil and prophecy. So this holiday is when the divine lovers make life snug for all to sleep through the winter.
Okay.
Right. So it's very much a cycle of lovers, a
mm-hmm.
cycle of the duality
mm-hmm.
of goddess and god. And it doesn't ever specifically say, actually, goddess and god, but it does refer to goddess and the goddess and the goddess and the goddess. So I suppose...
Mm-hmm.
There is room in there for gender and sexual fluidity.
Right.
I don't actually know. They didn't comment specifically on anything on that on their website.
Mm-hmm.
But it is a love cycle. It is
mm-hmm.
an intimacy cycle.
Mm-hmm.
It is a cycle related to sensuality and sexuality.
Right.
Which you find in other traditions, but not quite so blatant.
Right. Well, and again, we've got a lot of... From the 1940s and 50s, you have this awakening in the United States specifically, but it's in other, you know, countries. But I think it's because there is the drive to find the fact that we have a new level of feminine and masculine being redefined based on different things happening in the world and what was going on. And then the revolution, the rebellion, the kicking out of that in the 60s.
Right.
And then the 70s was, okay, so we rebelled against everything. What are we creating? Mm-hmm. And then 70s and 80s, and then you kind of move into the level. So this particular one was really the first for the United States.
Yeah, right, you know? Exactly. And witchcraft has been in the United States for longer than
right.
that. But Farrah Faria was the first to make it a legitimate non-profit
church,
to make a church, to uh-huh. go through the legal proceedings uh-huh. to be recognized.
Right.
The first in the United States. That's a pretty big deal.
That is.
And looking at that same timeline, this struck me, you know, the people were rebelling against Christianity, against the dominant culture,
uh-huh.
the our puritanical roots as
right.
Americans, right?
right,
in the 50s and in the 60s. And in the 60s and the 70s, there was rebellion against that. Because if you look at the founders of a lot of witchcraft traditions,
mm-hmm.
like Fred McLaren, Charles Adams II,
mm-hmm.
Oberon Zell, who worked with these folks, Carol Runyon,
mm-hmm.
Gerald Freakin' Gardner, these
yeah.
are men. These are all men.
Right.
They're all men. Raymond Buckland, all of these
mm-hmm.
dudes who made witchcraft, the foundations of witchcraft that we still practice today.
Yes.
Right? It wasn't until the 60s and the 70s, the late 60s,
mm-hmm.
that the feminist movement started mm-hmm. to really take over. And that's when we get Z Budapest and Starhawk and these feminist waves
right.
of witchcraft. And there is a part of me, like I'm going to say some shit right here.
Go for it.
There is a part of me that's like, we need more of the feminine voice in all of this. I get that these men are writing about the goddess and bringing feminine
mm-hmm.
energy, but excuse me.
We are.
Shouldn't women be writing about
right.
fucking goddess and
right.
the feminist movement and the energy of bringing of
mm-hmm.
that into religion?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So I find myself, I am grateful that people were brave and excited and willing to test these theories and write these books and put this energy out
mm-hmm.
there. And I find myself a little pissed off of all these male voices.
Right. Because, again, we go back to, I love that word, and again, makes it sort of, I seem to find that as my word. You're having men suddenly come up with the things that are about women. And it's
right.
like, wait a minute, there is a point. If we were telling you how your phallus works and the way it creates and the
right.
dynamics, you would be highly incensed in more ways than one
right.
that some woman is telling you how your body functions or how your emotions go.
Right.
And spiritual comes from and is driven because we are in the body. It is driven in that format.
Yeah.
So I tend to agree with you.
Yeah.
And when I first came to this spirituality,
mm-hmm.
I tended to be more dionic.
Right.
And
I think a lot of women are.
Because it's the swing of that pendulum.
Swing
yes.
in the opposite direction.
To
yeah,
that.
Absolutely.
And then you come back and go, well, okay, then we need a balance. We need some kind of harmony.
Right.
And
right.
I can understand, you know, the first thing we do is because we're in this beautiful body and it has its wonderful needs and our, you know, emotions, then we start patterning things on that dynamic. So the love of the god and the goddess, or the goddess and that which is the opposite of her, to create this wonderful experience of sensuality,
yeah.
sexuality,
yeah.
and that. And whether it is now gender fluid in terms of what is coming through, it still represents that
yeah.
process.
Yeah. And what's clear, especially when you go to the Farrah Faria website,
mm-hmm.
they give credit to Fred and Svetlana.
Exactly.
Right? However, Fred's voice is the more dominant voice.
Yeah.
He was the more well-known of the couple. But
right.
the couple created this tradition.
Right.
The two of them did this together. And a lot of the rituals and liturgy and the poetry, the
mm-hmm.
beauty
mm-hmm.
of this tradition was written and created by Svetlana.
Mm-hmm.
And the Theraphoria group, at least from what I can see as an outsider, is very clear about that.
Right.
They give Svetlana just as much credence and credit as they give to Fred. But it seems like outside of the organization, a lot of what you see and read and the history that you find on other places out in the world mostly talk about Fred, and Svetlana was his partner.
Right.
That shit irritates me. Because
I know.
You find that a lot in different traditions of witchcraft that were run by couples, like the fairy tradition with Cora Anderson. She is just as much a founder of the fairy tradition as her husband.
Right.
He tends to be the voice that people quote the most.
Exactly.
Anyway, blah, blah, blah.
Well, and it's important because what it does is it tells you that the dynamic is that, for the most part, the masculine voice in the more modern traditions, more modern in the sense since patriarchy took over, is the one that gives validity to whatever is going on.
Right, exactly.
And, you know, so we've got that kind of dynamic. But they have, I mean, I was just, you know, I was amazed at the way they put it together. And, yes, they've got a lot of connection with the illusion mystery in terms of that. And, of course, because the illusion mysteries was never talked about, we never really know all of what went on. So it has to be a recreation of something.
It is a recreation.
Rather than a, you know, reconstruction.
Right. Right. The mysteries of ancient Eleusis, and I've heard it, you said Eleusian, I've heard Eleusinian, I've heard another way of pronouncing it. I don't actually know how it's pronounced.
It is morphic.
So yes, it's Greek. But this is the mysteries of this tradition, it's the cycle of Kore, right? So from a mythological perspective, the young maiden Kore is abducted or perhaps chooses to go with Hades to the underworld. And she becomes queen of the underworld and shifts from Kore to Persephone.
Right.
She steps into her sovereignty. She steps into her queendom by choosing, or perhaps being abducted by Hades to go to the underworld. And the Theraphoria belief system follows that cycle of Kore as the maiden. But what it seems like to me is most of their celebrations are connected to Kore, the maiden, and the bliss of being the maiden, and the fun of being the maiden, and the frivolity of being a maiden, and they connect her to Kouros, the youthful male god, who I'm actually not familiar with at all.
No, neither am I.
But they say Kore is celestial throne, the moon, by Kouros' celestial throne is the sun. So they take in the Eleusinian mysteries, the mysteries of Eleusis, and they've sort of spun it a little bit, created it, shifted it a little bit.
Right.
And created a cycle out of it.
Right. Which, you know, is a wonderful way to take something and go further with it.
Sure.
You know, one of the things when I was with my, you know, training with my dad in terms of Wilhelm Reich and the therapy and his writings and what he did, and my father was a therapist that did that, but he also taught, is that Wilhelm Reich never made it a religion that you follow everything. He said, I am the beginning. Take it. Go with it.
Yeah.
And I think that's what's happened here with even something as the illusion mysteries. Yes, we can be very traditionalist, and that's always a good thing, purist and traditionalist, but to be locked into it is just as rigid and as, you know, difficult to maintain because we grow.
Right.
So we grow and we shoot new branches out. You don't keep pruning them off and making it just the stalk, you know. Then you don't get any fruit, you don't get any flowers, and, you know, it's kind of like a sterile process. So I'm glad to see this because that to me shows that kind of growth.
Right, right. And the piece that they've mixed in from more of a Western Anglo-Saxon system is the building of henges.
Yeah, I love that.
So they build these outdoor shrines and temples. They build henges. And this is how they connect to the fae. Right? So you create this magical space outside.
Right.
You create this portal outside, this henge outside. It anchors us to our physical location, mm-hmm. but it also works as a spiral, or not a spiral, a portal.
Right.
So that we may connect and contact other places.
Right.
Right?
Right.
So that's an interesting little mixture, too, because henges are not part of the Greek mystery system.
No. No.
It's very much a more Western European.
Right, more of that. And it kind of puts you into, like, okay, every culture, every tradition has had something that connects it to all the others.
Right.
And this has just done that other, you know, process. So, and I was taken by how, you know, they described literally on that website, the official website, how to construct a hedge, how to do your circle, how to, you know, the compass and the way you lay it. And it was fascinating.
Right. And what I found interesting, too, about that process is all of this information and their rituals and this the energy that is their tradition is completely open and available to anyone.
Yes.
However, they do have initiation.
Yes.
But what they, even on their website, they say it's rare for anyone to ask for.
Mm-hmm.
But it is there. It is available. It is a thing that they do.
Right.
But it's not a big deal.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm sure it's a big deal, but it's not.
It's not the you can only do it up to this far because you don't have the information, you're not official, you're not that, but then all this huge environment opens up if you do that.
Yeah, exactly.
Which, you know, is that. And then the thing that really fascinated me, and I have no idea if I'm going to say this right, is the fatala.
Oh, right, their symbol.
Their symbol. The symbol itself has it, and then there is a whole way to actually do it as a prayer.
Right.
And I printed out because I was so fascinated by it because it has, you know, so much intense meaning in its own right without necessarily knowing the tradition. It's the hand movements, the actual gestures.
Right, which we should probably take a break.
Yes.
But quickly, briefly, Fred created this whole system of movements,
mm-hmm.
sort of like yoga, and I think he even compares it to hatha yoga.
Mm-hmm.
It's different,
mm-hmm.
But these human shapes that are sort of prayers to the earth or meditation
mm-hmm.
to the earth, and this is something, this concept of body movement or body postures is something I've seen also repeated across many cultures.
Right.
So, and we'll talk more about Fred's early days and kind of what led him to
exactly
discover or create Ferroferia, but we should probably take a break.
We will take a break.
All right, we'll be back.
You're listening to The Witch, the Priestess, and the Cauldron, a radio podcast on the LMC Radio Network. Stay tuned, as more magic is coming your way right after these messages.
The LMC Radio Network is a media alliance whose excellent shows include The Lucky Mojo Hooter Rootwork Hour with Catherine Ironwood and Conjurman Ollie, Sundays 3 to 4:30. Kendallo's Corner with Kendallo Canvisa, Michael Carell, and Lady A, Mondays 5 to 7. The Crystal Silence League Hour with John St. Germain, Tuesdays 5 to 6. In the Streets with Beverly Smith, Tuesdays 6 to 7. Fit and Foxy with Madame Nadia and Jaya Dania, Wednesdays 6 to 7. The Now You Know Show with Professor Charles Porterfield, Thursdays 6 to 7:30. The Witch, the Priestess, and the Cauldron with Elvira Love and Phoenix LaFay, Fridays 6 to 7. And Liquid Libations with Andrea Weston, Saturdays 5 to 7. All times Pacific, add 3 hours for Eastern, sponsored by the Lucky Mojo Curio Company in Forestville, California, and online at luckymojo.com.
Thanks, Jeannie.
Hey, we are rad. We're rad. Okay, so we were back talking about early Fred.
That Fred. Fred Adams, that guy.
Yes.
All right, where did my notes go for that? Okay. So there is an interview with Fred Adams that was done in 2005 by Harold Moss, who mm-hmm. is the co-founder of the Church of the Eternal Source.
Uh-huh.
It's a pretty interesting interview. It's worth reading the whole thing if you are curious or would like to know more about Fred Adams and the Ferroferia origins.
Mm-hmm.
But basically, Fred was kind of a weird dude.
That sort of follows with all of the beginnings.
All of these early witchcraft people. You know, because he was born in 1928. So, right? This is odd, right? A visionary throughout life. Was very into the Madonna and Child. And was influenced by Robert Graves, which, whatever, I have feelings I won't get into. Margaret Murray, Jung, Greek myths, all of these things. And then in 1956, Fred had an ecstatic experience. He's minding his own business, walking around, and he gets this feeling in his body. He describes the experience that I won't go into a ton of detail with, but he describes this experience in detail and how it felt in his body, and he was struck by inspiration that God was a woman, and the divine is feminine, and he talked to his friends about it, and his friends were like, sure, Fred, that sounds groovy, or whatever they said in 1956. Swell, peachy keen,
yeah,
the bee's knees of an idea,
yeah,
or something. And so they created the Hesperian Fellowship.
Yes, there you are.
Where they explored the concepts of the feminine divine.
Ah.
And all of his friends at this point liked going out in nature. They liked being naked out in nature. They were nudists.
There you go.
And I love this. I freaking love this. One of the moments where Fred had one of his most powerful experiences in 1957, after he talked, he had his download, he talked to his friends, and they all thought, yeah, that's groovy, man. Let's go be naked in the woods. And while we're there, we'll find all this fruit that's ripe, and we'll rub it all over each other, and then we'll swim in the stream and commune with the goddess. So one of his first rituals was being naked out in the woods with a bunch of other folks rubbing ripe fruit on each other.
That vision is never going to leave me now. And I don't even have vision of what Fred looked like, and I want to.
I love it.
Oh, my God.
Well, idea, basically, since he had this moment in 1956, his idea was about having paradise on earth, and that paradise on earth was being connected to the earth, remembering nature, honoring the earth, which means the fae.
Right.
Communing with the fae, that concept, being a vegetarian, being naked. Sounds good.
Hey. Well, that's it. That's it. And it obviously, and we have to mention, this is in Southern California.
Right.
It is not with us alternate people in Northern California yet.
No.
It was Southern Cal.
Right. Southern California. Yes.
Yes.
Yeah. And, you know, he wanted to find paradise. And what he said is, you know, I had all these feelings before I'd ever heard of Wicca. And later he heard of Wicca. In 1963, he was talking about yoga, doing yoga in the wilderness with the trees and the rocks and the mountains. They did a lot of magic up in the Santa Anita Canyon. They do landscape yoga, which sounds interesting.
Yes.
And then in the mid-60s, he met Svetlana. And I like how they describe, they had a tempestuous relationship.
That definitely leaves me.
Right, with forays into other relationships. However, in the end, Svetlana and Fred agreed that they were soulmates.
That's
so
it.
I was curious, because I'm a nosy SOB, and I wanted to know more about Fred and Svetlana. So what I've discovered is that they met, and they had many, she's Russian, they had many similar feelings about the sacred feminine, about practicing goddess worship. They created this tradition together. But apparently Svetlana had a little bit of some mental instability. And when she was taking care of herself, she was good. And when she wasn't taking care of herself, she was not good.
Right.
And so they explored other relationships. They tried to have an open relationship, and it didn't work very well. And eventually Svetlana moved away to Nevada City. I believe, and Fred followed her. And then they decided, we're going to do this, we're soulmates, and as long as we can keep you healthy, we can keep us healthy.
Right.
Right.
Right. Well.
So there you go.
That's fascinating, because I didn't really get all of the Svetlana, like we were talking about, it was kind of one of those, well, and then there was Svetlana.
Right.
You know, and
right.
That kind of made me question, gee, it would be nice if you would stop making it like she's secondary.
She's a side note.
She's a side note. But that was part of it.
Yep.
But that is interesting, and I know that at some point in their wanderings that they did gather together with another group and became council, and, you know, that whole thing became another version. I think it was with, what is it, the Council of Bethlehem?
Seamus,
because that came up with Runyon and Oberon Zell, you know, they kind of put that together for a little bit.
They tried to unite hermetic, neo-pagan, and ceremonial magical groups, which didn't work out great, but it was an early
attempt.
And on August 2nd in 1967 is when they got their not-for-profit status. Excuse me, being the first group to do that, says right after that, on August 2nd, 1967, Fera Faria was designed to be a religion based on the bliss between lovers. So there you go.
That's it. But think of that, is that it was the first pagan religion that was
goddess-based
religion
that
was thus incorporated and made, given credit.
Yep.
Given credence. Now, yes, by the government saying you're a nonprofit church, but governments acknowledging religions are part of, you know, that whole making you feel like you're legitimate and grown up.
Right, and that's the thing, and that's a conversation. If anyone is, you know, paying attention to some of the conversations that happen in the pagan communities online, that's one of the things. There are definitely pagans who feel like, F that. We don't need the government to recognize us. We're pagans. And then there are people who are like, no, we want people to know we exist. We want not necessarily to assimilate into church culture, but there's some of that too. People like structure.
Of course.
Some people like structure.
Well, even in a ceremony, you have certain things. We are obviously going to be having another talk on, you know, something that's more chaotic, but it's, you've got this desire to have something, you know, prayer and a feeling of sacred space and that kind of a thing. And I think what I'm seeing here, and I was mentioning this before we started the show, is that this process, and especially, you know, talking about Fera Faria, is the swing opposite the sterility of more structured Christian and, you know, orthodox religions that they have. It's not, it's, there is a, and I know this could be very questionable in terms of others who think of it. I just feel that it doesn't allow for the warm fuzzy. It's always the I am the one that gives the law and the lawmaker, and you will do as I tell you. And, oh, by the way, there is the version of you love your neighbor and all that. But you've got some of that. It's put in as another version of it. And, you know, it keeps warring between the angry God and the loving God.
Right.
But they forget about the goddess.
Right.
You know, as an equal, in some form, that energy as an equal.
Right. Yeah.
So that's my rant.
No, I hear you. I totally hear
you. So, but, you know, these are, there are books, there are things that have been put out that are, you know, on that particular website that allows you to see the basis under which he utilized the different teachings and writings to put this together.
Right.
And again, she, Svetlana, too, but I think she was the more feeling of the two.
Right, and I think this is something else that you see, like with Doreen Valiente and Gerald Gardner. Gerald Gardner wrote all of these books, these rituals, but it's pretty clear that Doreen filled in the gaps and added the poetry in the prose. And I think that's what we see here with Fred and Svetlana, that Fred created this structure, and Svetlana created the poetry and the prose.
Right.
And some of these rituals, like, check out their website, some of these rituals are long-ass rituals.
Yes.
With lots of words and lots of recitation and lots of stuff going on. So, you know, if you like that kind of ritual, this is definitely something worth checking out.
Right. And, again, that's a hermetic, you know, that yeah, part of that hermetic.
Right.
Where there's all this recitation and, you know, this.
No, I'm not a hermetic.
Yeah.
Like, oh.
Well, I've always been fascinated by it, but I will tell you my inherent distaste for it comes up.
Right.
So I am, you know, I go, wow, that's really great. I don't want to do that.
I'm an ecstatic practitioner, and most of my foundation in witchcraft is from an ecstatic tradition.
Mm-hmm.
So at a certain point, I'm like, when are we going to do something?
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm kind of...
So, but that's the point, is that when you get into learning about these things or experiencing or reading about it, just like this for both of us, was a very moving experience
yeah.
to read about
yeah.
and get this whole other section.
Yeah, I actually am really excited about building a henge
yeah.
in the yard.
Yeah.
Fae.
Yeah.
Because I already work with them, and I have ways that I communicate with them, and I have special places where they have free reign.
Mm-hmm.
But I think a henge, there's just, henges are freaking amazing.
I know.
So fun.
I know. And it just makes you like stone megalith.
Right.
That's the biggie,
yeah.
you know?
Yeah. That's like deep ancestral magic.
Oh,
you know?
Very much so. I know that for, it's funny because thinking of that, I have something similar. I have a tall piece of rock that is really, it's like a needle, and it's in the center, but I did a spiral with the other stones, but I was everywhere I've moved, and should I ever move again, those are going to go with me, because those are charged with many different places of, you know, holding that energy, and as you say, letting the fae be part of my life.
Yeah.
And that's going to be interesting when I have to describe that to movers.
Yeah, whatever. So I have 6 practices that Farrah Faria offers
okay.
as ways to work with the Farrah Faria system.
Mm-hmm.
And this is from their website. So number one, this was written by Fred on July 17th in 1967, which was a Monday.
Oh, boy.
There you go.
Okay.
Number one, daily evocations and supplications for Farrah Faria, especially at night when going to sleep in a hypnagogic time, concentrate on imagery of paradisal sanctuary and memorize the parts.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Number two, maintain 2 journals, one as your personal diary
mm-hmm.
and the other dedicated to Farrah Faria researches. And then it talks about pages and blah, blah, blah. But there you go. You have a journal for your own shit
mm-hmm.
and a journal for traditional stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Number three, practice the rituals, spiritual disciplines, and your special research assignment. I want to know what that means.
Well, that, yeah.
What a research assignment.
Yeah.
Okay. So number four, establish a shrine with the goddess and god and the Corasalia, a small, balanced, and beautiful leafy branch,
mm-hmm.
which provides the tree of Axos Daemon. Dress the shrine with produce of the region and the season.
Aha. Uh-huh.
Right? So basically a seasonal altar. Make
right.
a seasonal altar.
Right. There you go.
I don't mean to sound glib or disrespectful, but
no.
Number five, make rituals of daily living to relate daily living to fairy feeling and paradisial aims. Recount these in your journals. I like this a lot.
Mm-hmm.
Look at your magic in your everyday life.
Right.
Because it's there.
Yes.
You know?
Yes.
And then the last one, number six, consecrate your living space and make it paradisial. And I hope I'm saying that right. Paradisial
seems like it should be.
Have incense, at least 5 candlesticks, an aspergillum or brush,
mm-hmm.
bells, different colored cloths for instant altar coverings, etc., on hand for spontaneous rituals and blessings. Start with blessing yourself and your loved ones, whether they are near or far. There you
Perfect.
Go. Right?
I mean, this sounds, it's very functional.
Yeah.
And I think that's probably why it rang a bell with me, no pun intended. It was something that I do,
yeah.
whether I name it Farrah Faria or something else,
right.
or just do it. It gave me a sense of understanding that where it comes from is from one's own inner connection.
Right.
And finding it and keeping it and being aware of it.
Right. Yeah.
So very much a practical. And I know that it talks about, you know, I found it interesting because, of course, they have different days, and they have different things for different days. It means, you know, there are certain meanings of the actual day, and it has a letter, and it has a, you know, they do have correspondences in this that give you an idea, which, thinking about even something as we have learned in the hoodoo tradition, certain days are set for certain things.
Right.
And again, it's where we kind of go back and forth, where you have the ties between all these different practices.
Right, right. Mm-hmm. And there are pages of ceremonial enactments, enchantments of the week, earth meditations, assignments, all these kind of things on the website. There is enough on the website to keep you busy in exploring the Barafuria magic and traditions for probably a really long time. There's also what is that called? My mind just went blank. The online chat board.
Right. They have a chat board. They also have a Facebook page.
Right.
And they have talked about the fact that, you know, both in the website of the organization and that, people will get back to you. You know, you connect with the community. And since we have an internet community, that is sometimes the way most of the people connect.
Right. Yeah. And that's becoming more and more commonplace, where people, because we are so remote and the internet helps us to be more connected.
Right.
There's a lot of folks who are connected only online.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. So there we are with, you know, the dynamics of what this tradition is about.
Right.
So
yeah.
How are we doing, my dear? I think we've covered a heck of a lot of ground.
Totally have.
I know.
Is there anything else that seems important? I'm looking through all of the last couple pages of my notes.
I know. It's like, did I get everything, or at least a good part of it? I know that it fascinated me that they did, you know, things about life and death with the illusion mysteries.
Right.
You know, the working on that and the fairy mysteries and the traditions that he pulled, that he came with.
Right.
You know, we call it our ancestry. I'm sure that in that it is there.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, it's pretty interesting. There's also, if you look online, there's an interview on the Jason Mankey's blog, Raise the Horns, that he interviewed Joe Carson.
Mm-hmm.
And so there's quite a long interview with Joe Carson, the current president of the board of directors.
And she has presented a lot at Pantheon.
Yeah, but not since 2015, though. So mm-hmm. maybe this next year they'll do another thing.
Right.
But, you know, it's definitely, if you are looking for a tradition, or you're looking, it's something we said speaks to you, or you find intriguing, it's worth looking into and digging a little bit more deeply. There's a lot. There's a lot of rituals, and they're all dated when they were originally written.
Right.
And they go back to the 60s, and that alone is interesting and fascinating, you know. So it's something new and interesting to explore if you have not yet had the chance.
Truly, truly.
Yeah.
So, and as I said, I found this very worthwhile for not only a topic to explore for other people to hear about, but for myself.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
So. Yeah. And it is pretty cool that the first pagan tradition, the first witchcraft tradition to be given church status, was in California.
I know.
Which seems weird. I mean, it doesn't. It makes sense, but it's just interesting.
It is. When I first started reading it, I said, oh, my goodness, Southern California. See,
yeah.
I was raised in Southern California.
Right.
In the Valley, yes, the Valley girl. But and they were talking about different things. These were things that were very part of my world, as I was not necessarily in the 60s of an age bracket that would have participated in that at the time, but it totally was like, yeah, I get that. I remember over in that place and, you know, over there and whatever.
Yeah.
So, but,
yeah.
So that is just like people up here in Northern California with, you know, the Church of All Worlds and some of the things that were in the Bay Area that have, you know, seeped into and become part of the tradition.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, the 70s and 80s, the Bay Area played a really big role in modern pagan movement.
Yeah. I mean, Star Hops, Budapest, these were all part of, you know,
the fairy tradition.
So it is definitely California.
We are the weirdos, mister.
That we are. But we are in the West, and if you look at the geomancy in based in the island of Ireland, the West were the magicians and the dreamers and the prophets, and those were because it was, you know, water and the West and going at starting of the setting of the sun. So that was one of the provinces, of the five provinces. And when I learned that tradition and started putting it on the United States, because it is, you can put it on any, as a map, you can put it, overlay it. I began to look at it going, look at that. Wow.
Right.
It made perfect sense. California. The West Coast.
Well, there's a future topic, geomancy.
Yes. Land geomancy more than a way of divining.
Yeah. Nicholas Mann wrote a really great book about geomancy. Anyway.
So we are at that moment where we're just closing ourselves down, but we're getting ideas for new shows for everyone.
Yeah. And next week we will air our show on the fall equinox.
Yes, we will re-air our show for that.
Which the equinox is actually the day before, or I guess it happens sometime between the 21st and the 22nd.
Yeah.
So, yeah, celebrate that balance and stuff. And coming up in November, so still a few weeks away, you have time.
Mm-hmm.
So we're going to do another Ask a Witch segment.
Oh, yay!
So make sure if you have a question, if there's something you want to hear us banter about, if there's a topic you are curious about, if you have questions about our personal lives, if you'd like to get a reading, anything like that, write in. And I have a stack started. Some of them may be the time may have passed by the time we get to November. So keep that in mind. We won't be doing that show until November.
Right.
But we have a stack of questions, but we'd love more.
No, definitely. We always love.
That's right. So witchpriestesscauldron.com is our website, and you can fill out the form on that website.
Oh, good.
And next Friday.
Yes, it's the equinox. Yay! All right. Well, until then, have a wondrous week.
Yes, thanks for listening.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Thank you for listening to The Witch, The Priestess, and The Cauldron, a radio podcast on the LMC Radio Network. Our podcast airs live every Friday at 6 p.m. Pacific and will be available for download. Questions or comments on this show or ideas for upcoming shows can be sent to our website, and that's at www.witchpriestesscauldron.com. Again, that's witchpriestesscauldron.com. On behalf of Elvira, Phoenix, Alan, and myself, Gwion Raven, a big merry meet and merry part and merry meet again. Blessed be.
If you have an appetite for fun, then the Disney California Adventure Food and Wine Festival is the place to be. March 2nd through April 12th, only at the Disneyland Resort. Enjoy deliciously fresh food, California wines, craft beers, specialty cocktails, live music, and more. All served up with a dash of Disney magic. Get more details at disneyland.com/foodandwine.